Wisconsin Supreme Court has reconvened. The Honorable Chief Justice Annette Kingsler presiding. Your silence is commanded.
All right, please be seated. Calling our third case of the day, Oconomowoc Area School District versus COTA, 22 AP 1158. Could I please have your appearances? Okay, the lineup I have today is 10 minutes, followed by 15 minutes, 30 minutes, followed by 5 minutes. Right? That's everyone's understanding? Okay, good. Let's start out. Please proceed.
Good afternoon, Madam Chief Justice, and may it please the Court. My name is Nicholas Yerk of Allen C. Olson & Associates, and I represent the cross-petitioners Jeffrey and Greg. Today I'll be addressing whether the Wisconsin Fair Employment Act's definition of arrest record applies to a record of a non-criminal offense, after which Attorney Lounsbury, appearing on behalf of LURC, will be addressing the issue of the district's motive when firing the COTAs.
I just want to make sure everyone hears everything you're saying, so maybe you could just adjust the microphone up a little bit, and
Is that better?
Yes.
Yeah,
perfect.
Thank you.
All right. So the Wisconsin Fair Employment Act prohibits employers from discriminating against their employees on the basis of an arrest record. The Act defines arrest record using broad language, and both the Act itself and prior precedent from this Court direct us to interpret the Act liberally in favor of coverage. The Court of Appeals ignored this directive and interpreted the Act in a narrow and convoluted manner contrary to the plain language of the statute. We are asking that this Court reverse the Court of Appeals, affirm LURC's well-reasoned judgment, and hold that the Act's prohibition on arrest record discrimination include arrest records related to non-criminal municipal offenses.
Counsel, I am looking at the Declaration of Policy in Section 111.31, sub 2. It says it is the intent of the legislature in promulgating this subchapter to encourage employers to evaluate an employee or an applicant based upon individual qualifications rather than upon a particular class to which the individual may belong. When I look at that language, that informs, I think, our interpretation of the provision prohibiting discrimination on the basis of an arrest record, because it seems to me a huge stretch to suggest that the district terminated your clients because of the class to which they belong. It appears to me just unequivocally that they were terminated because they stole from the district. It had nothing to do with the arrest record. It was based on their conduct, and the cases, including LURC's opinions, talk about conduct. So to me, it seems a huge stretch and very contrary to the policy set forth by the legislature quite clearly in the text about what the legislature was trying to protect here. Could you address that?
Absolutely, Your Honor. It's clear that the class that is at issue here is an individual with an arrest record. And an arrest record is defined broadly by the statute to include the sort of conduct that the COTAs were involved with, their contacts with law enforcement, and the information the district received from the prosecutor and law enforcement personnel. So because the statute defines arrest record in such a way that includes that conduct, they fall within the ambit of the statute. We're there isn't an argument on the other side, and indeed this wasn't in the briefing, as to whether or not the sort of information that the district received was the sort of information which could be considered an arrest record. The issue at hand solely turns on the definition of the felony, misdemeanor, or other offense language. And it's that language, the felony, misdemeanor, or other offense language, that has been, I guess, briefed in this case. And I think that the question then turns on whether or not that language includes a civil violation of the law.
But even if we agree that it includes a civil violation of the law, my question is, if we look at the textually expressed purpose of the legislature in construing this statute, under the record, and I've examined it very carefully, it is crystal clear, to me at least, that the district was not making a decision, a termination decision, based on the fact that your clients had an arrest record. Let's just, for the purpose of my question, assume that your analysis of the statute is right, the Court of Appeals was wrong, and the offense qualifies under the statute. Even given that, this isn't a situation where your clients applied for a job and the district says, oh, these people have an arrest record, we're not going to hire them. Or they got hired and then the school district says, oh, we just discovered this arrest record, we're firing you. The whole reason underlying the termination of your clients was the fact that they stole from the school district.
I don't think that that's an accurate representation of the facts in this case. In terms of whether or not the CODAs stole from the district, and in terms of what the district relied upon when firing the CODAs, the record from LIRC has the holding that, and let me clarify, a factual finding that the motive of the district in firing the CODAs was the information that the district received from the prosecuting attorney.
So, counsel, let me just jump in here. The CODAs get this citation in, I think, May of 2015, alleging that they've committed theft. They're still on the job for almost another year. Isn't that correct?
Indeed, I believe they were suspended for that year.
My understanding is that they, from the record that I've looked at, they were suspended for a few days, but they were back at work at the point that they were fired. Or am I wrong about that?
I believe they were suspended through the time in which they were terminated.
And then let me ask you this. Do you agree with your friendly other side that other offenses include offenses from other jurisdictions and military offenses?
Certainly. I think other offenses is defined broadly in a manner that includes both these sort of criminal offenses from other jurisdictions and non-criminal civil violations of the law. And that's supported by the text of the Act itself. So when the Act refers to civil violations of the law, it uses the term offense. There are two examples in the Act where it's specifically discussing non-criminal offenses and again, uses that terminology, offense. And so rules of statutory interpretation as set forward by this court say that we must interpret the statute in light of closely related statutes. And the Act itself is undoubtedly a closely related statute. And so, again, because the Act uses that other offense language or uses the word offense when referring to a non-criminal offense, the usage of other offense necessarily must refer to a non-criminal offense.
Is there any dispute in this record about the motive of the district in the firing?
I believe there is, and Attorney Lounsbury is going to be discussing that in more detail, but there are kind of two issues here on appeal. There is both the issue of motive and whether or not this is an Onalaska case or a mixed motive case, and there's the issue of the definition of arrest record, whether it covers the CODAs.
Right, but I think you were saying, though, that the motive of the district in this case was, in terms of the firing, was based on information received from the DA. Without that information, your clients would not have been fired.
That is certainly our position.
Okay.
And the position of Lurk as well.
How do you square your position with Foley v. Cost Cutters, Lurk's decision from 2015? Foley decision basically said that corroborating information from an arrest record does not defeat an Onalaska defense. It said the fact of the employee's arrest provided some corroboration of the employer's belief that the employee had been shoplifting. But it is clear that the employer's belief arose from its own investigation and conversations with its personnel, not from the fact of the employee's arrest. Isn't that exactly what we have here? We have a school district that did an investigation. The HR director came to the conclusion that a theft had occurred, and it strikes me that she turned it over to law enforcement to corroborate that. Law enforcement corroborated it. So are you distinguishing this case from Foley, or do you think Lurk got it wrong?
I think this case is readily distinguishable. So in the present situation, the district did not know who had stolen from the district when they issued their findings from their investigation. Their investigation report is very clear that they can draw no conclusions as to who was guilty of theft. And so that factual finding is what Lurk relied upon, along with the testimony of the district's decision maker, who was very clear that indeed she relied upon the information she received from the prosecutor when making the decision to fire the CODAs. So it's readily distinguishable. This isn't a case where the district had a belief as to the guilt of the CODAs and then sort of corroborated it. This is a case where the district clearly said they couldn't figure out who had done it, and then determined that it was the CODAs based on further information down the line. And I see that my time is up here.
Okay, thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Katie Meter-Lounsbury. I'm representing the Labor and Industry Review Commission in this matter. I will address the substantial evidence in the record that supports the factual finding of the commission that the district's decision to fire the CODAs was because of their arrest record. I want to be clear at the outset. The CODAs were never convicted. They didn't plead guilty. They didn't enter into an agreement that involved them having an admission of guilt. All the charges were dropped. In this case, the decision to terminate was made based on the opinion of a prosecutor that he believed they were guilty, and he believed he could convince them to enter into a settlement agreement. So Pam Casey was the HR director for the district, and she's the one who did the initial investigation in 2014 and concluded and issued a report in 2014 that she could not determine where the missing funds had gone. We know that some of it went to Garrett Lehrer, an admitted thief who was the only person who ever accused the CODAs, and he accused them hot on the heels of having been accused by the CODAs of being a shoddy worker who was maybe not reporting all of his scrap money.
Are you making up any of these facts? These facts in this case are quite interesting. I ask that rhetorically.
I wish I was. I'm not.
Counsel, and I want to get back to the timeline. Obviously, the district had some concerns because after the investigation, they suspended them for 3 days, correct?
They did. So they suspended Garrett Lehrer because he admitted to stealing from the district, and they suspended Greg and Jeff Cota because they had admitted to using the district's vehicles for personal use.
All right. So then the CODAs go back to work in June of 14. In mid-May of 15, they get the municipal citation. And 3 days later, they're placed on unpaid suspension. And that suspension, I understand, from co-counsel lasted until they were terminated, correct?
That is correct.
Got it. Okay.
And so the district concluded its investigation, and after concluding its investigation in 2014, in May of 2014, it gave them a short suspension, but trusted them enough to put them back to work. And the testimony of Pam Casey, who is the person that made the decision in this case, was that she did not feel that there's enough information on which she felt comfortable recommending termination at that point. She was asked repeatedly what led her to finally feeling comfortable 2 years later to recommend termination. And I'd like to tell you what she said. She said, she was asked a question. The only new information or evidence that came to your attention was threefold, right? The CODAs were cited for municipal theft. The prosecutor told you he believed or he anticipated that he could enter into a plea agreement and he believed they were guilty. And she said, that included restitution, correct? And those new pieces, this is the question, and those new pieces of information were what pushed you to decide to terminate? Answer, yes.
I want to ask you a question right at this point, because I want to make sure I understand the facts. It was my understanding that the prosecutor, the DA's office, told Ms. Casey that he believed he could convict the CODAs, correct?
That's correct.
And, but he didn't talk to her necessarily about the evidence that he had uncovered. He just had a belief in general?
That part is incorrect. Casey actually testified that he did not have any additional evidence to form the basis of his opinion, any new factual information than she had when she conducted her investigation. There was only one new piece of information, and that was that somebody else had been stealing. That was Matthew Newman, I believe his name was. He was a supervisor of the CODAs, and he had been cashing checks that were issued for the district at a local bar.
And he eventually got convicted of...
He pled guilty.
I just want to go back to the DA and what he said to Ms. Casey. Did he say that he was going to dismiss, that he was going to charge them with a municipal ticket and then he would dismiss it for...
Already charged them. So they were charged in May of 2015. And it was in April 26th, 2016, that Prosecutor Eck told Casey that he believed he could convict, but he believed he could convince them to agree to settle, and that the settlement would be that he would dismiss the charges in exchange for them paying $500, which he characterized as restitution.
And when you say charges, these are criminal charges?
These were charges that they were brought under a municipal ordinance that adopted the theft statute from the state statutes that even followed the same numbering system. So it was a charges that could have been brought under state or local charges, but they opted to bring them under local.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. I guess the one other thing I'd like to address.
Can I just ask one follow-up here? I don't have a great understanding of how we're supposed to do the analysis if we get there. I mean, you know, if we agreed with your analysis of that the Court of Appeals was wrong about whether this is another offense, theoretically we could also just reverse and let this play out at the Court of Appeals since they never addressed it. But if we did choose to get to this issue with how it applies here, help me understand here. Lurks, again, seems to find we did our own investigation. We kind of stopped, and then somebody else looked at this, talked to the same people, also thinks they're lying and or we're dishonest and maybe validates our credibility that and now we're going to take some additional action. How are we supposed to know when that rises to because of, you know, that questioning? What's the analytical framework to do that analysis?
Sure. A couple of things. One is with regard to this court's ability to address the issue. In Cree, this court told us that in employment discrimination appeals, the court reviews Lurk's decision and not that of the Court of Appeals. So Lurk inherently found that the offense was covered and then made the decision regarding motive. So all of those issues are properly before this court. Decisions regarding motive are factual questions, and questions of fact are for the agency, as long as they're supported by substantial evidence in the record. So you're right. It's a judgment call, and that's the kind of thing that the commission does with great frequency. They review conviction and arrest record discrimination cases dozens of times a year. But in this case, the decision to terminate was made based on the opinion of the prosecutor that he thought they were guilty. And they said, you know, Casey said she would not have terminated without that. And so, well, it can be a difficult decision. Number one, it's a factual determination that rests with the commission. And number two, in this case, it was really clear because she testified that she didn't feel sufficiently confident in her investigation that she wanted to recommend termination. And in fact, she continued to employ them actively until they were charged.
This work is just a little tricky for me, and you know, we do this sort of thing all the time. But so I get it. Lurk makes these findings. We need to defer to those. But whether it was because of is sort of the legal question, which is a different question than like that's ultimate legal question, isn't it? That's not a factual finding. Admittedly, there's factual findings that would underlie that. Like, for example, there's other kinds of cases where we're going to take the findings of fact, but we still have to sort of do a de novo application of the law. So in one sense, whether it was because of the arrest record, isn't that something we would do de novo, but take those findings of work?
Sure.
And how
sure.
do we split that baby here?
Sure. So respectfully, the court has held many times that motive is a question of fact. So the because of question is a factual question. They said that in Curry. It was said in Onalaska. It was said, again, recently by the Court of Appeals in the Kramer case, who analyzed a mixed motive under arrest record discrimination.
So is there any part, I mean, I understand that makes sense, that what I was thinking when I did this is a question of fact, but what is the role then for us, what is the role for us then on this second question in your space? What's the space where we have the judgment call to?
It is limited. The role is to see if any evidence in the record which a reasonable person could rely on to reach the conclusion that was reached by the commission, whether that evidence exists in the record.
Yeah. It's beyond facts, just like legally. I mean, I agree that. So assuming we take the facts as are, we're not challenging the facts, is there a role for us to do any independent legal review of that conclusion that Lurk makes? And if so, what's the space for that?
So I guess one place that we would ask the court to exercise its authority here would be in looking at the defense that has been asserted by the district in this matter regarding the Onalaska case. And in Onalaska, we had a situation where a police officer trainee was accused of admitted to drag racing with his brother-in-law. And based on the internal investigation of the employer, they terminated him. He challenged that, alleging that termination because he admitted to participating in an illegal act, that was a violation of the Fair Employment Act. The court issued a decision saying two things. It had a factual finding and a legal conclusion. And the factual finding in that case was that in that case, the motive to discharge the employee was his admission to the employer that he had engaged in an illegal activity, one that was actually punishable by a ordinance violation, by a forfeiture. They also made a legal conclusion in Onalaska. And that legal conclusion, which the commission doesn't dispute, was that an internal investigation is not an arrest record. So to the extent if the commission were to have found that the internal investigation was the reason for the determination, the commission certainly could have found that there was no violation here. The difference is the facts. In this case, the commission found that the reason for the termination was not the internal investigation, which was inconclusive, but the opinion of the prosecutor that he believed they were guilty. And that's exactly what this act was meant to protect against.
So it almost seems like the lesson here is hurry up and fire someone before they get arrested or before there's some other investigation, because then this act won't come into play.
Not necessarily. The commission can and has frequently found, as we talked about in the Foley case, for example, that a decision to terminate, even after law enforcement activity was underway, isn't necessarily because of the law enforcement activity. So in the Foley case, this was a Cost Cutters franchise that existed in a Walmart, and they had decided based on their internal investigation that this person had committed the wrongdoing.
Right.
And they kind of decided to wait and see it through, and the commission said that was fine. And in a number of other cases.
Isn't that what I just said, though? Hurry up and fire someone based on your own investigation before this even can become an issue.
But that's what I'm saying. The commission has found it's a highly factual analysis, and the question is, why did you fire them? The fact that
under that scenario, where there's no arrest, can the commission find that the firing was based on an arrest?
Interestingly, yes, because the definition of arrest record is broad, and it includes things that come before what we would traditionally call an arrest. If you look at the definition in the statute, it kind of goes chronologically with the order of the way things tend to proceed. So it starts with it's information, including but not limited to information indicating that an individual has been questioned, apprehended, taken into custody or detention, held for investigation, arrested, right there in the middle of the list, charged with, indicted, or tried for any felony, misdemeanor, or other offense. So the act of being, having the cuffs slapped on you, as an arrest, doesn't have to occur for arrest record
A company's
protection.
Internal investigation.
That's not
a company's internal investigation is an arrest?
No. Company's internal investigation is not. Onalaska told us that, and the commission does not dispute that an internal investigation is not an arrest. The question is, was the termination of the CODAs because of their internal investigation or because of the opinion of the prosecutor? The person who made the decision for the district testified that she did not feel comfortable recommending termination based on her internal investigation, and that it was only when the prosecutor told her that he believed they were guilty and he believed he could get a settlement agreement, that was when she felt comfortable recommending termination. And indeed, she drafted letters of termination the very next day.
So you don't have to hurry up and finish your investigation. If it was still ongoing and legitimately ongoing, that would have been one thing. But here it was concluded, they were back to work, and then this happened with the prosecutor.
I see my time's up. May I answer?
Yeah. Go ahead, please.
Oh, sure. So, yes, as long as the reason, the because question is, if they fired because of their investigation, which could be ongoing during the course of a police investigation and could even gather information from the police investigation, as long as that's the reason and not the mere fact of an arrest record. And the fact of an arrest record, we know from Vega, includes a settlement agreement of charges. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Oyvind Wistrom. I represent the Oconomowoc Area School District in this matter. The district's position in this case is twofold. First of all, that the CODAs were not protected under the Wisconsin Fair Employment Act by virtue of the fact that they were issued civil municipal citations in connection with the theft of district funds. Secondly, even if this Court finds that a municipal citation is included in the definition of an arrest record, the district did not violate the Wisconsin Fair Employment Act based on the exception created by the Onalaska Court. Under Onalaska, an employer is permitted to conduct their own independent investigation, do their due diligence, and gather as much information as possible before making a final termination decision. The fact that the police investigation in this matter corroborated the district's belief that the employers were guilty of theft of district funds does not bring the case outside the scope of Onalaska.
Can I stop you right there?
Sure.
Said corroborated the belief. And what I remember from the facts and what were just told to us by the attorney for Lurk was that they said, in fact, that they didn't have enough proof at that point. So is that really corroborating? That's not like Ms. Hess saying, I know they were guilty, and then the police affirm that. So use the word corroborating.
Corroborating, I think, is absolutely the right term, because the district believed at that point that there was the theft of district funds.
Right.
And, in fact, the finding by the commission in paragraph 20.
Right. But did they believe the CODAs did it? Not. They knew that there was funds taken.
No. The finding by the commission in this case, paragraph 20 of Lurk's decision, states, as a result of information gleaned during her investigation, which is Pam Casey, Casey formed the belief that Gregory Cota and Jeffrey Cota had kept scrap money belonging to the district.
And this is consistent with Casey's own testimony, was it not? The independent police investigation and the detective's belief of Garrett's accusations resulting in the issuance of the municipal theft citations further corroborated, in my mind, the fact that these individuals were not forthright and had lied during our investigation and had taken proceeds from the sale of scrap metal. And of course, she's referring to the CODAs in that testimony, correct?
Correct. And Ms. Casey testified, she was asked repeatedly about, in various ways, about what motivated her decision. But primarily, she testified that the reason they were fired was because, one, they stole from the district, and two, because they lied during the internal investigation. That was the basis for the decision. The fact that some of that information was gleaned from the subsequent police investigation and the fact that charges were filed did, in fact, corroborate her belief. And furthermore, in Lurk's decision on page 11, the commission even wrote further that as far back as April of 2014, the respondent had formed a belief that the complainants, which are Gregory and Jeffrey Cota, had retained scrap funds belonging to the district based on its internal investigation. So there clearly was a belief at that time that there had been money stolen by Gregory and Jeffrey Cota, which is the reason the matter was referred to law enforcement authorities. Had she not held that belief, she wouldn't have referred the matter to police.
I understand what you're saying. I think we're all struggling with this a little bit. Just two things. One is, if she had this belief, they didn't do anything in 2014, right? I mean, nothing happened until the DA got this case, and then they got fired. And she also said that it is also clear that the ability of the administration to determine which employee or employees are responsible for this cash shortfall is limited by the conflicting allegations which have been produced to the district. I lost track of how many passive voice references are in there. They're not. But at any rate, that was in 2014. So in 2014, she has a belief it's these guys. I mean, these are the guys who are, you know, taking the scrap metal to the WIM place, and they're running around with manila envelopes full of cash, and everyone knows that. And these three guys are telling on each other because there seems to be a lot of conflict at the workplace. So, yeah, she's got a belief that it's these guys because they're the ones who are involved in the scrap metal part of, right?
Yeah.
But she stops. And nothing happens for 2 years?
Well, it was her belief that she couldn't take the investigation further. She believed that law enforcement had a better ability to investigate, potentially subpoena records, and potentially to seek retribution payment back to the district. So there are limits to what she was able to do at that point. But clearly she believed the information she got from her investigation. They interviewed about 7 different employees, a couple of them multiple times. They received records from Wisconsin Iron and Metal, WIM. They also reviewed their own internal records. And those internal records reflect that there was approximately $5,000 that went missing during a 2-year period. And she had information that on one occasion, both Jeffrey and Greg Cota put approximately $80 in cash that they received from WIM directly into their pockets. So, yes, she believed that they stole from the district. Now, where's the other 50, you know, if there's $5,000 missing, I don't want to do math here in front of you.
Don't worry. We're all lawyers. We can't do it.
There's a significant amount of money that is, everybody's pointing fingers at each other. But she clearly believed, and the commission's findings support that she believed the districts were guilty or the CODAs were guilty of theft, which is why the matter was referred to the police to see if they could determine who was responsible for the additional
but
missing
can you
money.
See the can you see the problem here is that that was in 2014, and it wasn't until she gets the information from the DA that she fires them. So it's difficult not to draw the conclusion that it was because of this that led to their termination.
Well, certainly that information corroborated her belief. But the fact is that there was nothing new discovered as part of the police investigation. The prosecutor specifically indicated that there was no new information unearthed during the police investigation. There were no new facts, no new evidence to support a finding of theft. So the belief of theft that she had when she suspended them, and to be clear, the suspension was based on their use of company trucks to haul their own scrap metal. So the 3-day suspension wasn't because of the theft of district funds. She wanted to wait to determine whether or not there could be either corroborating or exonerating information from the police investigation that could potentially prove that maybe they didn't do it, and then she would maybe reach a different decision. But she also made it very clear in 2014 when they were suspended and in their report that employment action is necessary in this case. But the extent of that employment action, she wanted to let the police investigation determine, you know, where that would go and whether there could potentially be exonerating or corroborating information. And what she received was corroborating information.
Can I just ask one more follow-up? Just, yeah. So if I'm following what you're saying here, then you would have us say that the rule in this case is that as long as an employer believes that an employee has engage in conduct that should lead to termination, anything after that doesn't matter. There is no because of arrest record that would come into play.
Yeah, and the Onalaska defense and the way it's been interpreted by the commission prior to the COTA case was that an employer could rely on arrest record information as long as it wasn't the sole or the only reason for the termination. So, for instance, the Foley case, which is very similar. It's different in that the employer, Cost Cutters, wasn't the victim of the theft. So our case is very unusual in that the employer who made the termination decision was also the victim of the crime. But in Foley, the employer did an investigation, believed that they were guilty, the employees were charged, and then subsequently they were terminated. So the fact that they waited to terminate until the employees were charged didn't change the commission's view in that case. Again, there was corroborating information. The commission in this case has taken a very different position. They're arguing that the employer cannot rely on arrest record at all. They have to base the decision exclusively on their internal investigation. And that's not what Onalaska has said. The whole point of Onalaska is that it goes to motive and the belief. And even most recently in the Vega case, which addressed Onalaska, the court noted that we held that an employer does not unlawfully discharge an employee based on the employee's arrest record, if the employer concludes from its own investigation and questioning of the employee that the employee had in fact committed the offense.
Okay, but that's the part where you're losing me, because that is what seems like the distinction here. If they had concluded that they had stolen from them, and why would they not have to let them go? And the statements that she makes, I see the findings that you refer to when you refer to the corroboration, but she says that she wouldn't have fired them without the police, and you even said that there was nothing new that happened once they were involved. So it's very, to me, this is a very unique situation, but it's one in which, based on this record, it seems that there wasn't going to be anything happening other than based on the arrest record, that they didn't have enough or they would have just done it.
Yeah, and they certainly could have, and had they terminated at that point, there wouldn't have been an arrest record, and we obviously wouldn't be here today. But the whole fact that the employer is being...
Isn't that the lesson, then? Hurry up and fire these people before there's an arrest record, and then you don't end up in this scenario if the court were to determine that you were...
That's absolutely the message.
So for the employer who wants to maybe even give someone the benefit of the doubt, what if an investigation exonerates someone? Or, you know, reveals other information. He wanted to wait to have the full group of facts before you do what you're going to do anyway.
Yeah, it's the old adage, no good deed goes unpunished.
What's the proof that the investigation was still ongoing, other than their claim that it was, their own internal investigation? Had they done anything at all?
There weren't any further interviews or anything else, but it's clear from the record and from the letters and from the report that it states the investigation is ongoing.
Well, it states that, but they weren't doing anything to continue the investigation.
There wasn't an active investigation going on.
Does that make any difference when Casey's report concluded that, quote, there can be no question that some employment action and perhaps criminal action is necessary here in view of the evidence that this investigation has produced? But then she goes on to say disciplinary decisions could be better made following the conclusion of any criminal investigation. So to the Chief Justice's point, it seems to me that Lurk is creating a perverse incentive that is completely contrary to the textually expressed purpose of the legislature, which is to protect people from discrimination based on their status as having an arrest record broadly defined, which can include people who have been accused and investigated for a crime and never charged with anything or even given a municipal citation. So Lurk is now incentivizing employers whenever they have any suspicion with respect to an at-will employee to fire that person. I can't make logical sense of Lurk's position.
And I believe it's contrary to the purpose and intent of the law, which is to protect an employee who has been arrested or charged with a criminal offense from arbitrary and rash decisions by the employer. And the fact that the employer is doing their due diligence, gathering as much information as they possibly can before making that determination on discharge, which is a very, obviously, a severe punishment, which is exactly what happened in this case. They believed they were guilty. They refer the matter to law enforcement. Had they not referred it to law enforcement, or had they simply terminated, again, we wouldn't be here. But the fact that she was doing her due diligence, I think, should not be punished in a situation that we're dealing with.
Counsel, I don't see the question as whether or not she should be punished for us right now. The question, I thought, was much more sterile, you know, not involving who's right and who's wrong and what's just and what are societal consequences. The sterile question before me, I thought, was, you know, looking at the findings of fact, applying the standard, the reasonableness standard, the reasonable interpretation of the evidence supports the conclusion. Isn't that what we're here about? Or Justice Hagedorn said, well, you know, is there any way out of it? I don't know. I think you can get way out of it saying there's no reasonable evidence. You know, as a matter of law, there's no reasonable evidence, right?
Well, and I agree with the general principle that factual findings by Lurk must be sustained as long as they're supported by substantial evidence in the record. However, the application of facts to a legal standard, such as the Onalaska defense, is a question of law. And that is something that this court should review de novo. And if you go back to the Cree decision by this court, which was exactly that, it was the application of facts to the law. And this court wrote that that is an issue of law that this court reviews de novo.
So the application of the facts to the conclusion that there has been that the complainant constitutes arrest record discrimination in violation of the law. That's their conclusion, right?
That's the finding of law, correct. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That is to be reviewed de novo. Mm-hmm.
But doesn't that mean that then all of these cases are going to be here under de novo? That's not what intended for Lurk review.
But in a typical employment discrimination case, if a finding is made that the motive was because of their race or because of their age or because of some other protected classification, it's much cleaner. Onalaska is unique in that it allows an employer, and the commission has held in numerous cases like Foley and Delapast and Decker and a number of other cases, that an employer is allowed to receive information related to the arrest record. What's the key question is, what was the basis of the employer's belief that they were guilty? So it's the cause. So it's not a typical employment discrimination case in that regard, because simply because there was some reliance or some corroborating information that was received doesn't mean that it was unlawful discrimination under the Fair Employment Act.
Causation is typically a question of fact, whether it's in this kind of context, whether it's in a motor vehicle negligence civil action, you know, where you're negligent that the negligent caused the injury. You know, this is a finding of fact. And with the black letter law regarding how we are to approach findings of fact, I just don't know how you get around that unless you try to make everything de novo.
Well, I think the commission misapplied the Onalaska decision. And again, they deviated from the way it's been interpreted in the past, where it would allow some corroborating information. The commission, in their brief, and makes it clear that their position now is that there cannot be any corroborating information. If there's any information that's learned from the police or from the authorities, that then becomes the motive. Well, I disagree with that, Your Honor.
The very paragraph that makes the conclusion emphasize, or notes, therefore it's of import, nearly 2 years after the respondents had completed the active portion of the internal investigation, it decided to discharge the complainants. And then, you know, they conclude, they make a finding that testimony of the respondents made it clear it was the decision to terminate the complainant was the result, you know, causation, of the information it had received from the prosecutor. I mean, all of those things, you know, maybe it's right or maybe it's wrong, but these are the findings of fact. And well, the very fact that they highlight that nearly 2 years after the respondents had completed the active portion of its internal investigation, it decided to discharge. I mean, that in and of itself kind of lends, you know, if you want, corroboration, you know, support. So you know, they may be wrong, but that's not the question before us.
But I do believe that the application of facts to a legal standard is an issue of law, and that should be reviewed de novo. So clearly the commission made the determination that the arrest record was a factor in the ultimate decision. But ultimately it goes back to the issue of are you terminating based on conduct or are you terminating based on their status as somebody with an arrest record? And Casey clearly testified that the reason she terminated was because of theft and because they lied. And if you look at the decision from this court in County of Dane versus Norman, which distinguished the difference between conduct and status, and even cited to the Onalaska case, even though it didn't involve Onalaska, it was a housing discrimination case. This court wrote in County of Dane that this court noted that the Onalaska defense is applicable where the employer discharges an employee on the ground that the employee relied on the underlying conduct of the employee rather than merely his status as a person with an arrest record, which resulted from that conduct. And here, clearly, it was the conduct that formed, that was the motivating factor here. Yes, there was corroboration from the police investigation and the charges and from the prosecuting attorney. But, you know, that distinction between conduct and status, I think, is critical. And I cited in my brief, too, the opinion of the Attorney General from 1990, where the court specifically, or the Attorney General, wrote that although City of Onalaska may be read narrowly as protecting an employer from finding of arrest record discrimination only where the employer conducts its own investigation of an individual's conduct and only where it questions the individual about such conduct, it is my opinion that the employer is protected if it bases its employment decision on the individual's conduct as opposed to the individual's status as an arrested person, even if the employer bases its conclusion concerning the individual's conduct on information which the employer receives from other sources, even including law enforcement.
Can I just follow up on that? I'm trying to get a good sense for your position, how it might apply with some different facts to make sure I get a good sense of it. Let's suppose there had been no internal investigation and law enforcement had forwarded information indicating that the CODIS is stolen from the district. Does that change your analysis? Because it seems to me the part of your position is that if it's conduct and not status, there I'm made known conduct, and I should still be able to fire them even if we did no internal investigation.
Yeah, and so your facts are the employer receives information from law enforcement that the offending employee has been arrested or charged with the offense.
Correct.
And the employer does no independent investigation or corroboration of those facts?
Not until it had that information. Correct. That's my hypothetical.
Yeah. So if the employer receives that information and then conducts its own independent investigation, and that investigation is able to corroborate or confirm that the employees were in fact guilty of the offending conduct, then yes, they can be discharged under Onalaska.
Okay. And I think your broad principle here, too, is that in this situation, the facts alert tells us, assuming we take those, is there wasn't enough to terminate based upon the investigation as is. Once the law enforcement does its investigation, that was maybe the straw that broke the camel's back or whatever it was that put it over the top. Lurks seems to take the conclusion that because that put it over the top and was decisive, that's enough. Or maybe they would say, if it was relied on at all, that's enough. I take your position to be the fact that there's corroboration or even additional information. Here, I don't even know if it matters, if I'm understanding your position correctly, whether additional information was discovered or not, to the extent that some independent investigator questioned, came to the same conclusion that they were not credible, and maybe maybe that reinforced the conclusion that already comes to internally, therefore you take adverse employment action. Maybe that's enough for you too. But you would say that it's not because of the arrest record, it's because of the information, so it doesn't matter, Lurk's findings be what they are, that put it over the top, that isn't determinative or even relevant statutorily.
Well, it's certainly because of the underlying conduct, right?
Yeah.
It's the conduct of the employees that resulted in their termination. It was not their mere status as somebody with an arrest record. Because, you know, again, the employer could have simply terminated at the end of their investigation. Mm-hmm. And even if they had a suspicion, an inkling, they don't have to have solid conclusive evidence, as long as you're not relying upon an illegal motive, as long as it's not based on a protected status. And at the time they completed their investigation, yes, they had every right to terminate.
Yep.
But
that's a significant proposition of law. I'm not saying it's wrong or right. Onalaska, I thought, was a bit more narrow than that and had to do with what investigations were. The principle you're offering, and if this court's never, I mean, Onalaska is a court of appeals decision. This would be potentially a very significant, a decision with regard to how you conduct this kind of analysis if we reach this question. But the principle that you're laying down is that it doesn't matter if information is provided by law enforcement. It doesn't, as part of an investigation, charge, arrest, whatever. What matters is if it was because of the conduct or because of the status. And that's the distinction you would like us to announce in opinion if on this question.
Well, I partially agree with that. I think, yeah, it's an issue of conduct versus status, but the employer still has to do their own independent investigation. They have to get some evidence outside the arrest record. They can't simply rely upon the arrest record and say, well, they engaged in the unlawful conduct.
Why not?
Upon the arrest and then terminate. That absolutely would violate the law.
Well, why not? I mean, why if law enforcement did an investigation that said, here's evidence that says that they stole from you, why couldn't the district say, yeah, all right, sounds good. I mean, that they stole from us, we're going to let them go. Why do they have to do their own investigation?
Well, for the Onalaska defense to apply, there has to be some independent investigation. And simply relying exclusively on the arrest record, in my view, would still violate the law, even if the employer is the victim of
that. If it fits within Onalaska, I mean, again, it's a court of appeals decision. We're trying to figure out how to do this more broadly. But if your distinction is status versus conduct, I'm not sure why that would matter. Go ahead.
Well, if the distinction is clearly conduct versus status, I agree it shouldn't matter. But at least based on the Onalaska precedent, which I know is not binding on this court, or any of the decisions from the commission, which are, again, not binding on this court, all of those decisions have held that an employer is allowed to terminate where they have information from independent sources outside the arrest record, and they don't rely exclusively or merely on the fact that somebody is arrested and they're a person that had the status of being or having an arrest record.
Can we talk about this?
Can I ask this real quick?
Yeah.
You just said information from independent sources outside of the arrest record.
Correct.
Here, don't we just have an arrest record? Isn't that the only additional piece of information? Because there was no additional information that the police uncovered. Had they uncovered something else, had there been additional facts, as we said before, that maybe you turn it over to the police to determine additional facts, they got nothing. The only thing that we have that's additional is something that's considered part of the arrest record, which is an opinion of a prosecutor and a charge brought by a prosecutor. Those things are covered by the definition of arrest record. We don't have additional information here. Doesn't that make a difference to this concept?
But it goes back to, again, the basis of the employer's belief that the employees were guilty of the offending conduct. And that belief was formed before there was an arrest record. So, okay, and at that time, the employer...
But the only thing they did was based on the arrest record because they didn't do anything before the arrest record came.
They didn't take final employment action, but they made it very clear that employment action is warranted and perhaps, as I think it was Justice Bradley read, is there could be criminal charges. There's something else needs to be done here. But we're not going to make that determination on the employment status until after we have all the information available to us.
Is there
any? There could be exonerating, there could be corroborating information. In this case, it was corroborating.
Is there any case that suggests that when an employer has done an investigation and pauses and doesn't take adverse employment action and then is turned over to law enforcement, is there any case from LURC or the Court of Appeals or this court that says everything the employer did until it turned over to law enforcement is ignored and erased? I'm unaware of any case that suggests that that is just erased from the record and we're looking at it with blinders on in a vacuum. We're just looking at law enforcement.
I'm not aware of any such case either. And again, the vast majority of cases on applying on Alaska by the commission have involved cases where the employer learns of the arrest record. The person is charged. They're in the newspaper. You know, they receive the information. And then the employer does their own independent investigation to determine whether or not the employee engaged in the conduct. Here we have the inverse, right? The employer learned of the information. They did their investigation. They determined and they believed, according to the commission, believed that they were guilty of the offending conduct and then referred it to the authorities. So it's a very different factual scenario than in most cases. So the only case that I was able to locate that had the same factual history would be the Foley case, where the employer believed they were guilty, did an investigation, the employee was then charged, and then they were terminated. So simply because they waited, the fact that they received that corroborating information that they were arrested and charged did not take the case outside of Onalaska. And that was less than 10 years ago, 2015.
I realize we spent almost all your time on the second issue. There is other issue regarding the words of the statute of 111.32 sub 1 and the phrase other offenses of... I don't know how much time you have left, but I know it's under 5 minutes. Why don't you give us your best argument on that issue?
Yeah, well, in discerning the plain meaning, the court should use the common, ordinary, and accepted meaning of words, and statutory language has to be read to give reasonable effect to every word in order to avoid surplusage. In this regard, Black's Law Dictionary, I think, is an important source, defines offense as a violation of the law, often a minor one, but a crime. The current version of Black's Law Dictionary also uses the term crime, offense, and criminal offense interchangeably. Now, the Commission seeks to rely upon a 1977 version of Black's Law Dictionary where it defines the term and then says, not indictable but punishable summarily by the forfeiture of a penalty. Well, prior to that term is the word crime, a crime not indictable. So the clear definition of offense, at least based on Blacks, and I have some other authority that was cited in my brief, but I see that my time is up, is only limited to criminal offenses, not municipal citations.
Can I just ask a follow-up, Chief?
Yes.
Thank you. So your definition gets you to an interesting place, I think, if you use the example of of OWIs, of operating on intoxicated offenses, right? Mm-hmm. Because an OWI first in Wisconsin is a municipal violation, and, of course, anything over a first, two through ever, is a criminal violation. And so in to apply that definition, let's just not talk about the substantial evidence standard, just in a different context. You could terminate someone for a municipal violation under your definition, but you couldn't terminate them the exact same conduct for a criminal violation. I have a real hard time juxtaposing those two propositions.
Yeah. And I agree with the analysis, the fact that a first offense OWI is a municipal, it's a forfeiture, it's not a crime under the law. So that employee is not protected under the law. But yeah, a second offense OWI, if that's a felony or a misdemeanor, that employee would be protected from an employment decision unless there's either a non-Alaska situation or there's a substantial relationship between the offense and the employment job.
Right.
Then if it's substantially related, they can suspend if there's charged and then terminate if they're convicted.
Can I do one quick follow-up on that, too? So following up on that, what if they're charged with the OWI second and they're fired and then they realize it's really a first because the first offense is outside the time frame? Do they get to be rehired under your
scenario? Or it was a refusal and it shouldn't count?
Again, if they were terminated based on substantial relationship tests, then I don't think they would be. It doesn't matter then, because if it's a first offense, they're not protected, so there would be no entitlement to reinstatement.
He beat the hypothetical.
Thank you,
Your Honors. I appreciate your time.
Rebuttal. Your Honors, the Commission asks that the Court do three things here. First, that the court should accept the long-held and most reasonable interpretation of any other offense to include, of course, criminal offenses outside of the jurisdiction of Wisconsin, but also offenses that don't constitute a crime, but that are committed within Wisconsin and that are involve law enforcement, such as a first offense drunk driving charge. Second, we ask that the court accept the factual findings of the commission that are supported by substantial evidence in the record regarding the motive in this case. And third, and I would say most importantly, we would ask that the court create some clarity regarding arrest record discrimination and the authority to terminate an employee when an employer believes from information that it gleans from the arrest record that their employment warrants termination.
Counsel, I'm going to go back to the question that I asked your friend on the same side, going back to the textually expressed policy of the legislature, which is to protect people, individuals, from being discriminated against just because they have an arrest record without regard for their qualifications. That's not what we have here. It can't be Lurk's position that we just ignore the fact that the employer did this investigation that led the HR director to conclude that a crime had been committed, but she says it's better if we let law enforcement, you know, confirm that. In no realm is this discrimination by virtue of the status of having an arrest record. Is it really Lurk's position that that's the only reason the school district terminated these two individuals, and it had nothing to do with the fact that the school district believed that they stole from them? This really is an arrest record discrimination under the text of the statutory purpose, is it?
It is. Had the commission believed the theory that the attorney for the district is now proposing, that they were looking for exonerating evidence, if the commission had believed that, it could have found that the investigation remained open and that at some point along the way it became convinced that there was going to be no more information and that that was the reason. And that, the commission could find, wouldn't be a violation of the statute because they were basing it on information. That's not what happened here. The commission found and it's supported by the evidence, that the district was not persuaded to terminate based on information that it received in its own investigation, but was committed to terminating once the prosecutor told her that he believed they were guilty.
So if you receive information from law enforcement, and that plays a role in putting it over the top, if you will, is that the test you would use? Like, what's the framework that you're asking us to adopt?
So I guess I would ask you to look at the whole case, which is held that in an employment discrimination setting, where any portion of the decision is based on one of the reasons that is prohibited by the legislature. The legislature created the Wisconsin Fair Employment Act and established certain reasons that cannot be a factor in an employment decision. And one of those is arrest record. So Hull held that depending on how much that weighed in and whether the decision would have been made with or without that information, that changes, number one, if there was a violation, and number two, what remedies attach.
What was the date of the arrest?
2015. Hold on a second. I can give you the exact date. When you say arrest, I guess I'd
but
have to ask what you mean.
However you want to define it. When were they first arrested?
They were charged.
No, not charged. Or is that how you're defining arrest record? You have to be charged.
No. Arrest record is broad. It includes everything. You could never be charged, and you can have an arrest record. So their arrest record included a lot of components.
So what's the date, according to you?
Well, there's more than one date. The arrest record included the fact that they were investigated by the police, they were charged, and ultimately up until the time that the charges were dismissed.
The earliest date
of the arrest record would be when they were charged, and that was, I believe, May 15th, 2015.
So it's not investigation, it's the charging date. That's how you define arrest record here. May 15th? When did the prosecutor say they were guilty? Because I heard that being the
prosecutor test. Told Pam Casey that they were guilty on April 26, 2016.
Okay. And when were they terminated?
They were terminated on April 27, 2016, one day later.
Okay.
And I see that my time
and
is
so
up.
And so which arrest record is it that is the because they were terminated because of the arrest record on what day?
They were terminated on April 27th because of the opinion of the prosecutor shared on April 26th.
So then arrest record is the opinion of the prosecutor here.
That is one component, and that's the component that the commission found the district relied on in deciding to terminate.
But that's not in the statute, right? 111.32 sub 1 says arrest record is questioned, apprehended, taken into custody or detention, held for investigation. So not just investigation, but have to be held for investigation, arrested, charged with, indicted, or tried. So it has to be one of those. The DA saying I'm going to issue charges and then dismiss them for a $500 restitution isn't in here.
Arrest record is defined broadly, and that list is non-exhaustive. It starts with, it includes, but is not limited
right,
to.
Also,
and in Vega, the court held that a settlement agreement, in that case it was a deferred prosecution agreement, is a component of arrest record.
When
basically
was that?
Everything up into, where you have entanglement with law enforcement up until
so
a conviction.
When was
that vis-a-vis right. when there was the termination?
I'm sorry.
When was it entangled? When did the entanglement start?
The entanglement began when there was a police investigation.
What date? Give me a date.
It was turned over to the police on May 15th, 2015.
Okay, thank you. That's helpful. So, and April 2016 is when they were arrested? Terminated?
Yes, April 27th, 2016.
So a year later, the termination occurred because of the arrest record a year previous.
That's not the contention of the commission. The contention is that they were terminated. In fact, the commission found that the district did not terminate based on the initial charges, but rather that they terminated based on the opinion of the prosecutor that he believed they were guilty and he believed he could convict.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you for interesting oral argument. The-